another thing that I appreciated about Rebecca was last week she came up to me and said, I really liked what you did with the sermon series where you took a song and interacted with it, a song from the secular world, and interacted with it because she really felt like Christians are not conversant enough in what is happening in the world and the way that the world speaks about meaning and speaks about the things that it values. And we can be interacting with it. And she reminded me, even through email this week, that Christians need to be involved in those conversations. Christians need to understand non-Christian art. We do. We really do. We need more people who are Christians and thoughtful going to Emily Carr. We really, really do. And Paul got that, which is why we are doing this sermon series. For a little while, we are going to take songs from the radio and interact with them, songs from the secular radio, Shadow FM, as I am calling it, because that's what Paul was doing. Paul got it. Paul went and memorized and appreciated pagan poetry, and you can read this in Acts 17. I talked about it last week, but let me just recap it for you now. In Acts 17, we see Paul interacting with people from Athens, as in they're Gentiles, as in they believe in Zeus and Aphrodite and all of those Greek gods. And Paul memorized some of their poetry. He read it, he appreciated it, and then he recognized that there was some truth going on in there. And he could then have this conversation with the people in Athens because he appreciated their artwork. That's awesome. Maybe evangelism needs to start with appreciating the things going on in the world of the people we want to reach. Because that's what Paul did. Like, he genuinely appreciated their poetry. And he quotes it back to them. And it's a poem, two different poems about Zeus by pagan poets. And he quotes it back to the Athenians that he's talking to. And he says, you guys got this, but it actually applies to Yahweh. Now let me talk to you about that. He appreciated it. He filtered it through the scriptures. And then he interacted with people about it. I think we need some practice in this, which is why we're doing what we're doing here over the next couple of weeks. So I'm going to play a song for you now. It's off of Shadow FM. It's called Ain't No Rest for the Wicked by a group called Cage the Elephant. And after that, we are going to interact a little bit, and then I will bring some scriptures into that conversation. So.
Me. She said, I never seen a man who looks so all alone. Could you use a little company? If you pay the right price, your evening will be nice and you can go and send me on my way. I said, you're such a sweet young thing, why you do this to yourself? She looked at me and this is what she said. Oh, there ain't no rest for the wicked. Money don't grow on trees. I got bills to pay. I got mouths to feed. It ain't I'm still walking down the street when I saw the shadow of a man creep out of sight.
All right, before we get to the scriptures, you have the lyrics on the back of your bulletin. Take a minute and look at them. And I want to practice what Paul practiced. There's always things we can criticize. In fact, one of the things that I recognized about myself a couple of years ago was that I was critical in order to appear smart. And so I became condescending and I became unappreciative of seeing, I wasn't able to appreciate the good things because in order to appear smart, you appear negative. I don't want to do that. I want to practice what Paul did here. Paul sees something pagan, and he still finds some good and some truth in it. So the first thing that we're going to do before we put on our critical lenses is we are going to talk about what's good in this song. What is right and true? What can we affirm? Because Paul finds something to affirm in a poem about Zeus. So what can we affirm? What is true in this song? What do you see? Call it out. Money don't grow on trees. Very true. Well done. Ron, yeah. Well done. Well done, Ron. Ron said that the writer in this song notices the people who are down and out. And he presents them in a pretty accurate picture in some ways. And he seems to even perhaps have some compassion. I think that compassion comes out, for example, when the way that he responds to the woman. Why do you do this to yourself? I hear care and concern in that line. Well done. Dave. I'll come back to you, Kathy. Dave's noticing that the songwriter, our poet here, puts up a mirror to the world and says, what I'm seeing in the mirror here isn't right. And he includes himself in it too, doesn't it? One of the things I love about this and would want to affirm is the last two lines. I can't say much because I know we're all the same. We all seek out to satisfy these thrills. I'm just like that preacher man. Yeah, well done, Kathy. He doesn't judge. Well done. Kathy noticed the last line that we just talked about and then also says he doesn't judge. He doesn't judge because he's in the same boat. Yeah, me too. Dwight? People act out of desperation. Yes. And he's noticing the desperation going on in the world, that the pressures that are put on people and the way that that then therefore impacts their view of money and the need that they feel to get more to meet the demands of the pressures and the internal struggles that we have. Yeah. Rebecca. Yep. Rebecca's noticing a contrast between the first two where there's a lot of probably injustice happening that drives these people to do what it is they're doing in terms of prostitution, in terms of robbing. But then there's also this very different, there's a juxtaposition here between the first two people and the last guy in a position of power who's now, he is not the one being abused, he is the abuser. Yeah. Well done. Good reading. Jack? Jack is pointing out, resonating perhaps with the line that we all seek out to satisfy those thrills, that we are all somewhat discontent and we are all, in one sense or another, thrill seekers. We seek to medicate the things going on inside us by seeking pleasure, seeking thrill, seeking excitement. Give it whatever name you want. Did I see another hand over here? Lionel. That's Lionel's last. Go ahead. Not last, but Lionel's noticing the fact that he is relating to the two people at the beginning. He's having conversations with them, in spite of being in a precarious position in the second one, but he's still relating to them. He's interacting with them, not even blowing them off. Well, he can't blow off the second one, but he's not. He's interacting with them. He's treating them with dignity. What made you do this? Why are you in this position? I like that. Yeah. Well done. Good interactions. What should we resist if anything, in this song? Is there something that you see that you would say, no, that's not true? Or I'm not so sure about that. I'm not sure I would advocate what you're advocating. Is there anything that we should be resisting readers? Anything you see? Susan? Nice, well done. Susan wants to resist the line, there ain't no rest for the wicked, because in fact, that is what Jesus offers the wicked. Well done. Good reading. Anything else that you would want to resist? Am I seeing a hand there, Joel? So to paraphrase you, to make sure I'm hearing you correctly, you're saying that the writer makes it seem like we're all the same and we can just go about seeking the thrills or go about making the money to make ends meet however we want, that it, in a sense, the song might even validate the paths that they're taking because they feel that they need to take them?
What's the difference? Like, yeah, like, what's the difference, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. So Joel's wondering if there's sort of a message of ends justify the means. And if that message is there, we should resist that. You're right. Dwight? Desperation doesn't provide justification. That's a good way of putting it. Yep. Dave? There's no hope. Well done. Good reading. That's a good reading, Dave, and I think that's a fair reading. Dave said that there's no hope in this song, and that's true. It presents problems and then says there's probably no solution because there ain't no rest for the wicked until we close our eyes for good. So you're not going to find hope in this life. And yeah, that's a message that we should resist as Christians. Absolutely. Well done. Good reading. Let's turn in our scriptures, or you can see it on the screen here. I would like to bring this passage into some interaction with this song. This is Paul writing to Timothy, and he says the following. 1 Timothy 6, verses 6 to 10. Godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into the world, and we can take nothing out of it. But if we have food, and this word could be translated either shelter or clothing, probably means shelter, actually, but if we have food or shelter / clothing, we will be content with that. Those who want to get rich fall into temptation and a trap and into many foolish and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. And some people, eager for money, have wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs. And I think the song presents a picture of at least a couple of people who have pursued money and have therefore pierced themselves with griefs. And I love that there's a non-Christian coming to that conclusion about the dangers of money. And we need to be aware of the dangers of money. Now, to be fair, money itself is a tool. Money is neutral, right? The passage does not say that money is evil, does it? No, it doesn't. But where does the evil come from? What makes it grow? If money isn't evil, and godliness, in fact, isn't the answer, if you read it carefully, then what's the answer? What's the problem? The problem is discontent, isn't it? The problem isn't money, and the solution isn't godliness. The problem is discontent. Godliness with contentment is great gain. Now, discontent shows up in us in a whole bunch of different forms. The passage talks about foolish and harmful desires that plunge us into ruin and destruction. And we can very easily just sort of blow it off and say, well, that's talking about greedy people, and I'm not a greedy person. But greed is only one form. Greed is only one form of discontent. And there are, I think, some other more subtle forms of discontent that we find in ourselves. At least when I held up a mirror to myself and took a look at myself against this passage and this song, here are some readings I came up with. Let me see if you resonate. We have fears. And fears produce discontent. Fears that I don't have enough. And I need more money because I don't have enough right now. And I need to have enough to make sure that I am safe and secure. That's a form of discontent. We worry if we're going to have enough. And so therefore we accumulate to try and assuage that worry. Doesn't work very well. We also have insecurities. Insecurities are related to fears, but this is the one that says, I am not enough. Not I don't have enough, but I am not enough on my own. I need one of these to make me feel better, right? And I need the latest one. I am not enough, and therefore I'm going to purchase this, which will make me feel better, because it will produce status, because people with these things, whatever you fill in the blank with, are the people that I aspire to be like, and I wish I were like, and therefore I accumulate these things because I am not actually enough on my own. I'm discontent with who I am. And you put those things together, and we operate in a culture that has all of these pressures. If you've watched teenagers, and having lived with one for a number of months, teenagers have a ton of pressure on them to have certain things. You got to have the right phone. And there's a lot of pressure to get not just an iPhone, but the latest iPhone. There is the pressure to have Beats headphones or AirPods. Those are the status symbols right now for teenagers, or Birkenstocks. These are legitimate pressures that teenagers are under to make themselves feel like, I have status, I have enough, I measure up. But when you pass the point of being a teenager and you enter adulthood, we get all of those pressures and then the additional ones that come with being in a peer group that's now making more money. And so now it's the right type of house or car or vacation. The pressure to be a parent is like, well, have you taken your kids to Disney yet? Like, I kind of feel that pressure. Stop putting that pressure. No, it's not you putting the pressure on me, but I feel that pressure, right? Our kids are at a certain age now where they might appreciate that, and there's the pressure to go and do that. Or there's the pressure to be a certain type of successful person so I can retire early. And if you don't retire early, is there sort of a lack of status? We sort of look down on those people? Is that the way I pick up these things from time to time. Maybe it's true for you, maybe it isn't, but I'm certainly seeing these types of pressures. Or, you know, I don't know, the pressure to put your kids in hockey. There's a ton of money involved in hockey. Whatever it is, do you not feel these pressures? And they relate to our fears and our insecurities that I either don't have enough or I'm not enough. There's discontent going on inside of all of us. There's the greed sometimes, but there's more. Discontent is bigger than just greed. So to recap, money is not evil. It might be the root of all kinds of evils, but money is neutral. Discontent, the things going on inside us, are the problem. But therefore, if money is not evil, but discontent is the problem, money is not evil, it's dangerous. I don't think any of us really want to believe that, and I have a hard time reconciling that within myself, but if discontent is the problem, money is not evil, it is dangerous. Have you heard of a substance called lye? L-Y-E. You can put it up on the screen. Lye. Lye is an ingredient or tool. It's an ingredient used to make cleaning supplies. Soap, even. Some of the soap that you use. It's also used for baking. Lye, however, it might be neutral in that it's an ingredient, but it can actually be very dangerous to us. And the reason is that lye reacts with water. And when water is added to lye, it becomes an acid and can burn. So money is not evil, but it's dangerous because of the things going on inside us. Lye is not bad in and of itself, but when you put it on your skin, it reacts because there's water in our skin. The things going on inside us produce something that's corrosive. Maybe we need to start thinking about money as a little bit more dangerous because it reacts with the things going on inside us. Money is not evil, but maybe it is dangerous. Until we deal with the discontent going on inside, the fears and the insecurities, as well as the greed, money will be dangerous for us because it's reacting with those things, and it produces something that isn't good, something that's a little bit corrosive. And I love that this song captures the dangers of money. and what it produces in us. I know we can't say much because we all seek out to satisfy those thrills. You captured it really well. So we need to grow contentment. It isn't godliness, interestingly. I find that fascinating in this passage, that godliness isn't the answer. It's godliness plus contentment is great gain. So how do we grow contentment? Olivia, would you put up the last slide? Growing contentment. We've talked about this before, but the first way to grow contentment is gratitude. We need to be grateful for the things that God has already given us. I met a man who had lost his family, and losing his family, he lost a fair amount of money as well. And he started a practice of making a gratitude list almost to keep himself afloat mentally, because it was just weighing him down so much. And his disposition changed completely as he started making very long lists of all of the things that God has given him and the things that God has done for him. Gratitude can help produce contentment. The second thing is self-awareness. Awareness both of the things going on in ourselves, and we've talked about this before. Walk down the aisle of the store that you like. You'd love to just, if someone said, here's a gift card for, you'd fill in the blank and say, this is where I'm going. But walk down the aisle of that store, even in your mind, and see what's going on inside you, the wants that we have. They creep up out of nowhere. And if you start to notice the way that marketing works and the way that it plays on our insecurities and our fears as well, just practice becoming more aware of these things. It'll raise your level of awareness and hopefully at least push us towards, no, I'm recognizing that I'm not content and I need to learn to cultivate that. Last one is give generously. I would suggest that you give off the top. Because of the insecurities and the fears that we have and the things going on inside and the cultural messages and so on, if you'd wait until everything else is done and then give with what's left, there's never enough left. We have that message going on in our culture and inside us that there's never enough. But I challenge you, and I bet, and I have found, that if you give off the top, there's always enough. Try it and see. But I think we'll find it to be true. Let me close with a couple of stories first. I have a friend who is living out exactly what the Apostle Paul warns about in this passage. Those are frightening descriptions, actually, in that passage. Olivia, would you put it back up on the screen, the first slide, please? These are frightening descriptions when you talk about the falling into the trap and the temptation and many foolish and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction, being pierced with griefs. Like, I don't want to be described in that way. There's just a danger involved in in combining money with the stuff going on inside me, and I have seen it now lived out in my friend. My friend has never been able to figure out that enough is actually enough. He doesn't actually know the word. And he has a successful business, and he has moved from one house to bigger house to bigger house to accumulating more and more and more, and it's never enough, and it produces so much anxiety in him. He is constantly worried about money and feels like he never has enough, and it consumes him. And it is so frustrating to watch. It's heartbreaking. Do you know how he got that way? He started out with very, very little. And then he started making a little bit of money. And the money reacted with all of the fears and insecurities going on inside. And he happened to be really good at making money. And he made more and he made more. And it just continued to spiral for him. And it's been really sad to watch. I have another set of friends. They have 3 kids and they live in a 2-bedroom place. They have 1 car. But they are grateful for everything they have. They don't make a lot of money, but they intentionally live really simply. So simply, in fact, that although they don't own a house and have been continually saving towards that, they still found ways to support me as a student going through seminary. They said, we want to support you. We're your friends, and we believe that God will use you. And so we want to be a part of that. And so they gave off the top, not just to their church, but even to this little guy in seminary who might one day make it into ministry. But they have practiced contentment. They have practiced generosity. They have practiced simplicity. And it has produced contentment in them. And I really admire them. And they are joyful people. And they are the complete opposite of my other friend. And it's really sad to watch. But at the same time, it's really hopeful for us too, that we can. One of the things that I would like to resist in this song is when it says, I can't slow down. I can't get out. You know, I wish I could. You can. And I think we should be resisting that message at that point. If we tell ourselves, you know what, I'm in too deep. No, we're not. We're not. Because, like Susan pointed out, there is hope for the wicked. There's hope for the rich, too. So I will offer us a moment for silent reflection, and then Ron will come and offer our congregational prayer.